Hey there, welcome to the Creative Class. I am your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And I believe that teachers are one of the most critical elements for students to reach their creative potential. And so on this podcast, we explore ideas and tools and strategies and blueprints, and I tell stories, and often I share the mistakes I've made along the way. And today we're going to talk about a misconception that I see in a lot of classrooms. It's a misconception I had as a teacher, and it's the idea that somehow creative projects have to be hands-on, and that hands-on activities equal creativity. And the reality is that's just not always the case. Yeah, that's sometimes the case. In fact, that's, I would even say, often the case. But there are a lot of examples of hands-on activities that are not minds-on activities. And so I want to start by sharing a story about one of the big mistakes I made in the classroom as a new teacher. Now, before I get there, I also want to point out, if I sound a little under the weather or if my voice sounds any different, it is allergies. I'm not sick. I promise you will not get sick from listening to this. So there you go. Anyway, let's launch into the story. It was the first Friday of the first week of my first year as a teacher, and I was determined to have my students engage in a hands-on learning activity. My students were going to solidify their understanding of the five themes of geography by creating collages that would represent each theme. I had spent weeks asking friends and family members for old magazines. I'd hit up every single back-to-school sale and purchased an absurd amount of glue and cardstock and tempera paints. I mean, this was going to be epic. But it wasn't epic. Not even close. See, three of my classes finished early, which meant that most students just wandered around talking while I frantically looked for places for the paint to dry from the collages. In one class, a group of students decided to smear paint on their faces, and in another class period, most of the students didn't even get started on the mini project and they were just chatting the whole time. Now, that's a bad project, but I was determined. So the next year, I tried the same activity. And this time I had clear procedures and expectations, and things ran smoothly, in fact, really smoothly. But I was left with this nagging sense that I had just kind of wasted a class period for each of my class periods that I taught. Yeah, students had fun, but did they really learn anything? Did they even solidify any new understandings? And I wasn't convinced. As a pre-service teacher, I'd had a professor who shared Edgar Dale's Cone of Learning. And you may not know that name, but you've probably seen the visual. It's this little pyramid, and at the top it says something to the extent that they remember only 10% of what they read and 20% of what they hear, 30% of what they see, 50% of what they see and hear, and 70% of what they write, 90% of what they do as they perform a task. And so I thought, that makes sense. It needs to be hands-on. They need to be experiencing history for them to remember it. Now, it should be noted that Edgar Dale never actually included those percentages. And he only created the visual as a representation to tell people, hey, we should have multiple modalities as we teach. It should also be noted that there was no scientific backing to his visual, and that there's really no research to back this up, but it is one of those persistent things that you see all the time in education. I had designed this collage activity as a way to increase the retention of knowledge. I wanted them to really understand the five themes of geography. And I believed that hands-on learning would make things stickier. But I had never actually created an activity that would lead to stickiness. It was hands-on learning, but it was not minds-on learning. Now, when I was in the fourth grade, we created sugar cube models of the California missions. We didn't talk about colonization or even what it was like for the Native American who was suddenly faced with this encroaching onto their land. I mean, none of that was covered in the curriculum. We just made models of California missions out of sugar cubes. Lots and lots of sugar cubes. And we mostly didn't finish it in class. In fact, pretty much every one of us had to take our missions home, which meant that other kids had these immaculately designed missions that their moms mostly had created. And meanwhile, mine was halfway melted. It was a mess because apparently sugar cubes melt when you add hot glue. Who knew? Now, I didn't learn anything about the California missions from making this model. I'm sure that there were some small skills that I might have gained in terms of crafting. But unlike a true STEM challenge, I didn't even design anything new. There was no creative thinking. There was no real structural thinking that went into it. It was what Jennifer Gonzalez calls aggression earn project. It's an activity that she described where her child had done this aggression earn to learn about the Greek city-states, but never actually learned anything about ancient Greece. It's one of those kinds of projects. And I mention this because I recently had a teacher candidate talk to me about her practicum. And she said, I'd like to do project-based learning or try out game-based learning as a mini unit, but we are spending 3 weeks on maps. They spend most of the time coloring the maps with colored pencils, and that's what they do pretty much every day. Wow. That is not how you learn geography. I mean, I can think about you could discover new places through virtual explorations. You could do a project connecting the maps. There's so many ways you could do it, but just coloring in a map with a colored pencil doesn't require much cognitive heavy lifting. And by contrast, there are a lot of learning tasks that aren't hands-on, but that they lead to deeper knowledge. When I taught a self-contained middle school class, so I was teaching all subjects, we would spend 40 minutes a day in silent reading. My students engaged in deep, imaginative world building when they read fiction. They understood profound truths through the power of story. And when they read nonfiction, they geeked out on ideas and understood concepts at a deeper level. There was nothing passive about reading because their minds were actively engaged. Now, to an outsider, you may say, well, that's not very hands-on, but it was incredibly creative. And it was a reminder that often something that looks like a, quote, consumer activity can be deeply creative. Now, the same thing is true of Socratic seminars and debates and discussions. None of those things really require your hands, but they all involve deeper creative thinking. Now, I do believe in using hands-on learning for student projects. When hands-on learning is tied directly to the standards, students often understand the concepts at a deeper level. And when the tasks are inherently meaningful and creative, the hands-on learning becomes this bridge between the abstract and the concrete. But it has to be purposeful. There has to be that connection. So how do we fix it? The following are some questions that I found to be really helpful as guiding questions to ask yourself as you think about the hands-on learning that you're designing for your students. First one is the hands-on learning actually tied to specific standards? Now, when I taught eighth grade, my students created model roller coasters that they designed using upcycled materials. And this project required a conceptual understanding of forces in motion, which they had to label in their visual plans, in their sketch ahead of time, and in their explanation of how the roller coaster worked. This tied directly to the standards. When they engaged in various STEM challenges, we tied each of the challenges to the NGSS standards and the STEM process standards and the ISTE standards as well. This way, we could assess via observation and student conferencing and rubrics. And students also engaged in self-reflection and self-assessment. So the idea is, yes, it is totally possible to do a hands-on learning experience where you're solidifying those deeper understandings from something like science. The next question is, are students thinking critically? As a quick divergent thinking exercise, I have students take a set of items and then they have to design something new from it. At times they might have a specific item that they need to create, like maybe designing a bridge. And other times they do rapid prototyping and have to pitch their design of what they're going to create in like a persuasive advertisement, which would fit into the persuasive writing in language arts. And this process is incredibly fast. Students brainstorm individually, they follow it with a group brainstorm, they have a moment to clarify the idea, they engage in rapid prototyping, and in the end, they do this, like I said, this divergent thinking challenge. And the goal here is that in the process, they are thinking critically. They are problem solving. They're engaging in iterative thinking. So it's not just that they are following the teacher's directions and doing recipes. The goal is that they are truly going through this process and their minds are actively engaged as they rapid prototype their whatever thing that they are actually creating. The next question is, are they engaged in creative thinking? And that's very similar to the last one. But when I first had students create projects, I would have these detailed project papers with step-by-step instructions on how to do every part of the project. And although I believe my students were artists, I had basically given them a paint-by-numbers set of directions for everything they did. And I don't believe anymore that that is what true hands-on learning should be. They should have creative control. They should be generating their ideas. They should be doing research ahead of time to build deeper understandings. They should be brainstorming together as a group. They should be iterating and improving. And that, again, is one of the reasons I love design thinking, because design thinking is often very hands-on in what students are creating. But in the process, they own the entire creative process. And so their minds are engaged in this creative work as they do the physical prototyping that they're going to do. So yes, part of it is very hands-on, but again, it's coming from a place that's deeply minds-on as well. The next question is there any meaningful discourse occurring within the activity? Now, the best hands-on learning experiences include conversations that help students make sense out of the content through peer conversations. And this is one of the things I love about game-based learning. If they do a hands-on game or simulation, they're often learning about the concept as they're doing it. For example, when I had students do learn about industrial revolution and industrialization and labor unions and factories and all that kind of stuff, one of the ways to solidify the concepts and to get them to talk about the pros and cons of the Industrial Revolution was to have a class factory where they were basically doing this assembly line activity, and then I was manipulating the labor market. The same thing happened with a very hands-on activity of Monopoly, which was how we learned about communism, capitalism, and socialism. And again, the goal was that through this game, through this hands-on learning, you were able to generate deeper discussion, which helped them to make sense out of the core concepts. The next question is, does it matter to the students? And that is one of the most important things to understand, is it has to matter to them. They have to feel like it matters to them. I didn't care at all about coloring in maps with colored pencils. So when I had to do that, it didn't matter to me. My motivation level was super low. The same thing happened with the sugar cube missions. And so I would say, again, that's where that ownership makes a difference. If they can own it and if it matters to them, then it's going to stick even more. So let's go back for a second to that collage. The third year that I did it, I changed the collage up yet again. Now, it was still a fun activity, and They generally had a good time doing it. But instead, I met with two teachers who helped me figure out how to revise this, and we all did this as a common activity. The first thing we did was to turn the collage into a collage concept map, where students would use colored pencils to draw connections between the themes. They would still use the paint to kind of shade ideas, but the color scheme had to represent the mood about different aspects of the themes of geography. Suddenly, they weren't just finding pictures, but they had to combine and make unlikely connections. Next, they had to explain their collages to their peers using their phones to record audio, so there was this peer discourse part. And then these short discussions helped incorporate the meaningful discourse and lead to a place of deeper thinking about it. So we didn't just abandon the idea, but we incorporated elements of divergent thinking by having that concept map element. We brought in a discourse element, and we really upped the game in terms of critical and creative thinking. And in the end, it became a really valuable lesson, and I could see them making connections on the five themes of geography that they really hadn't been doing before. Hey, thank you so much for listening to The Creative Classroom. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes, or I guess it's now Apple Podcasts and Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.